Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning into the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams as co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Happy Monday, Dr. Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, and I'm so sorry. I had to turn down my special invitation to the inauguration.
No.
You know what? Actually, in the old days, a former member probably would have gotten an invitation. I don't know whether I'd have ever gotten one, but no, they would welcome and get special treatment. They used to be a congressman and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know, maybe former congressmen wouldn't even be allowed to go this year. And some of them might not want to climb over barbed wire. They might be allergic to barbed wire and not want to go in. But, you know, there's a lot of hype going on I, for example, probably would have no desire for political reasons or anything else. But even the fact that, you know, there's so much preparation that why would anybody want to deliberately be in that atmosphere? Of course, my opinion is that this is overhype. This is really hype. And it's hard for me to believe that the real incentive to announce that we have to do something to really protect things was they discovered that some homeless people had a little fire under a bridge, and it frightened, the Biden people, so they had to do something. There's a lockdown, you know. They did that after 9/11, but I think that incident was a little bit bigger than what's going on here. Anyway, there's a lockdown. People are hysterical. 20,000 troops are there and all set to go and take care of any problems that they have. And, you know, Trump's gotten a lot of criticism even when he doesn't deserve it. But he's been criticized, and some people, you know, will make a point, and it's not necessarily a right or a wrong point. And they say, well, he should, you know, in order to maintain some senses of orderliness, he should go, to the inauguration. I sort of sympathize very much with him not bothering with it, but I think either position is okay, but because you wouldn't know exactly the motivations of why they're doing things. But I got to thinking about this. Where is he? Well, I think it's interesting where Troop's going to be. He's going to get on an airplane, and he's going to fly to Florida, and it may not happen, but I can just visualize at 12 o'clock noon, the bells will ring, and Trump's teeing off on number one. And people, I sort of think that's sort of funny, you know. They're all up there worrying about this riot, and he's down there ready to play golf. I think it's a little bit of a stretch. But anyway, he has to, you know, Trump's had a lot of rallies. And I got to thinking, there's 20,000 troops going in from the Guard unit to have, protection in inauguration, which is virtual. And no thousands and thousands, they could get 100,000 people there at some inauguration. But no, they have 20,000, and that's probably the largest single group there is, to maintain order. Well, maybe because Trump's not going to be there, maybe there will be more disruption. Because I got to thinking, Trump's done some unique things and some weird things and all this kind of thing. But I think what is pretty unique is the fact that even though they're considered bad people by the opposition, but he talked to a lot of people. He had a lot of rallies. He had big crowds, tens of thousands of people to these things. So he probably could be a million, could be 2 or 3 million people that he's talked to. But you know what? I don't remember any noise and reports of violence at these meetings. There probably some. You can't have that many people without some disruption. But basically, they were peaceful organization, peaceful rallies that they had. And right now, if it's a virtual meeting and rally and inauguration, boy, we better be prepared, and it won't be quiet like a Trump rally. There was a lot less violence at the Trump rally than they're anticipating here. But let's hope there's no violence at all. But it does raise the question, what about the people would answer me and say, yeah, but what about the last rally he had? He had a meeting, and he set them off to cause a riot at the Capitol. which is a bit of a stretch, a bit of a stretch. The information turns out that there were some radicals there, radicals identified with Black Lives Matter and with Antifa. But you know, to say that, and I would never say that on my program, I don't want people to know what I'm thinking. If you even say that, that's criminal. You can be banned forever from ever speaking out again, or ever having an invitation, or ever getting on a broadcast, this sort of thing. That's a very dangerous thing to say, even if it's true. That's irrelevant whether it's true or not. So it's an amazing thing going on right now, and we'll have the inauguration. I sort of predict, I'm hoping this prediction comes true, that you know, everybody came to see a riot and they were disappointed. They came and there was nothing to see. And of course, who's going to take the credit for that? But let's hope that's the case, because I think this is done way overblown, and it's just an extension of this artificialness of putting the blame on Trump. So whatever happens, you know, we'll go on to the next step. It's, you know, as bad as things are, it's not the end of the world. We've had bad times in this country before, so I can still look at the really, really horrible times, and I can find them where they were a lot worse. But philosophically and fundamentally, we're in big trouble, because when you look at the shadows of our foreign policy, the shadows of the monetary policy and the budget, no, in that sense, we're in the worst shape. As far as violence goes, 20th century was a very, very violent century. So let's hope this goes smoothly, and that people can have voluntary discourse, and we can have competition, have the setting set so there can be some competition in social media, so there isn't a monopoly and there isn't censorship, which is artificial. That is what we need, and I think it'll work out. I think the market's going to come up with an alternative to the social media so that our views can be expressed freely. Daniel, welcome again.
It is a surreal situation in the Capitol today, and you know, it is very possible to hold these two things both valid, that anyone who broke in and broke the law and broke stuff in the Capitol should be prosecuted. They deserve to be. But in terms of how the media paints it as an organized coup to overthrow the government, you know, we've seen a lot of those. I've been in a few myself, actually, and this wasn't that. It was some violent people. We don't know. Some of them were maybe Trump supporters. Some of them had other alliances. We don't know. But the media does play it up, and the media plays it up for a reason, which is to ratchet up the fear factor. That's what they enjoy doing. They've done it for the past year. With the coronavirus, and they love doing it. And so we have this bizarre situation. You mentioned it in your opening statement, where they had to lock down the Capitol today just before we started the show because there's a fire. Oh no, the Trump people are coming with bombs. No, it turns out there's some homeless guys living under the bridge, and a propane tank blew up. So it's sort of comical in a way. It's sort of like what you'd expect in a banana republic, where you have all this military showing up. On the fringes, you have homeless people, you know, catching fire. But it really, you know, it does remind me of the overreaction after 9/11. As you know, Dr. Paul, I came to work for you right after 9/11. And the Capitol Hill police at that time, the overreaction was unbelievable. We had several of these things where we had to run outside and all assemble in an open field for our protection because Al-Qaeda was coming to get us. And I remember, and I've told the story, I'm sure, before, they said, run, run, just run, the plane is coming. And I said, well, which way? They said, it doesn't matter, just run. And I thought it did kind of matter, because I didn't want to run in the direction of the plane. But it's it really is that kind of overreaction. But, you know, Dr. Paul, this the real part is with these 20-some thousand troops who, for some strange reason, weren't involved in putting down the insurrection a few days ago. It really is the D.C.'s like Baghdad. They even talk about there is a secure military zone established. It's throughout the downtown. The mall, the National Mall, was closed. You can't go on it. Bridges are closed. The metro's closed. Roads are closed. Nobody can show up. It's really one of the most bizarre things we've ever seen.
Yes, and you know, we see this problem in terms of politics and partisan politics, and that is, you know, the Trump and the Trump organization versus Biden and the Democrats. And it is real. There's nothing fake about that conflict. It doesn't have a lot to do with serious philosophy on economic policies, all because, you know, I've said so many times, they both participate in some very, very unsound constitutional and economic programs. But they are at battle. There is no doubt about that. But you know, I think there's some other items too, because very much influenced by, especially on the far left, are influenced by the deep state. But they're both sides are influenced by the deep state. I mean, we even talked about that a lot on some of the policies under the Trump administration. So you have the natural partisanship, even though it's not philosophic in a true sense of the word, but there's partisanship between the two, but there's also the deep state that has a lot of influence, and they do, believe me, they do, and they have a lot of influence on what goes on in the media. But there's another element to this, because the people who are involved on this are the ones who are trying to figure out what to do. And right now, in this country, it's sort of over and above this or beside it, and that is this move toward Marxism. I think it's real. I think some of the so-called far leftists and progressives are involved, but there is a Marxist philosophic movement. They're philosophic. They're true believers in what they do, and one goal they have is chaos. So if there's a minor epidemic coming along, they know how to use it. If there's other things that come along, they know how to use it. So they're the ones who benefit no matter what. And I think, is it ever possible that the Marxists may participate in even attacking their own? They've been known to do this. So, you know, if there's very few Trump people in town, and none of them are participating, and you have the progressives there that exist, that something might happen where the true Marxists are going to stir up trouble, and that's what they look for. They want chaos. They want the breakdown of society. They want the further breakdown of the economic system, and they're not even shy about this. I mean, you can find it in their literature that's their strategy. So there's a lot of factors involved there. We'd like to think, well, this is just a little argument between Biden and Trump, and that's all we have to get over with. So no, it's a lot more to that, and ultimately it's power. That is the essential argument that goes on.
And one thing you won't see on the media, Dr. Paul, are reminders of in 2017 when there were riots throughout D.C. for Trump's inauguration. There are pictures of cars on fire, things being broken. Of course, everyone who was caught then was let go. They were not charged. Unlike now, where the FBI has a nationwide manhunt. I've been driving for a while in some remote part of California, and there was a sign with the FBI saying, please help us find these people who stormed the Capitol. This is out in the middle of nowhere. It's pretty weird, but you know, we have short memories. Americans have short memories, and the media is part of that. But yes, indeed, in 2017, there was rioting that went on among people who were not happy that Trump was being inaugurated. But you know, the one thing is, Dr. Paul, and what we're trying to ask with the show's title and what we're trying to say is there a legitimate threat that justifies what they've done, 20,000 troops shutting everything down, putting in a military zone, or is there some hype going on and who benefits from the hype? And here's a couple of things. First of all, we're going to talk about this. We've already seen them walking back some of the assertions. And we saw this piece on antiwar.com today that the top federal prosecutor in D.C., Michael Sherwin, he said there is no evidence that people who stormed into the Capitol had formed a, quote, kill capture teams to target U.S. officials. That was an allegation made by an Arizona prosecutor. The D.C. prosecutor who was there said there's no evidence of this sort of thing. But, you know, that does get headlines. Remember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said half of us were about to get killed. I feared for my life. Well, turns out that was kind of a little bit of hype. And the other thing, Dr. Paul, I don't know if you saw this, but there's a video going around yesterday of the Senate chamber when the guy with the buffalo horns walked in. He was using some bad language, but he was preceded by a Capitol Hill cop. And you walk in and you see there are two guys sitting there. One of them had been hit by a rubber bullet, and he was just sitting down. And it was this weird buffalo guy who apparently is involved in all sorts of climate change and Black Lives Matter rallies and all sorts of things. He's the one that went up there and stood up and had his picture taken. And the police officer casually said, "Hey, you know, this is really," he said, "this is the sacredest place. So please, can you guys get out?" And the guy who'd been shot, he kind of looked like maybe someone from down in Texas. He said, "Don't worry, I'm making sure nobody is disrespecting this place." But it was weird because what you see on the media and what you see when you actually see the videos, yeah, of course, there are some violent videos and those are reprehensible and people should be prosecuted for violence. But when you see things like this, it's kind of like, I think this might be a little overblown.
You know, we do have Republicans that try to be independent, and they're sincere, and they'll think, well, I need to vote for impeachment because this doesn't look good, and this attack on the Capitol is very, very bad. And it surprises me that, first, that their loyalties are so superficial, but what about when this information comes out that more or less disproves all the reasons for the hysteria? And sometimes we can look at that with COVID too, that they never change their mind. No matter how many reports you point out that masks don't matter, that it doesn't change anybody's opinion. Well, no, it changes some because it is so bad. But on this, you know, the Republicans that say, no, I'm standing on the Constitution, and they're lying to themselves and everybody else, or they could use, once this is proven, that could be a reason for, not going all the way and digging problems for themselves by, rejecting the Republican position. But that's a little bit of partisan politics. But I think that it's a shame that when facts come out like this, by that time, no, it was started. It was the Trump people that did it. And they had this strategy. They'll still believe this thing that even the government has admitted wasn't true. You know, this whole thing about the kill capture teams. They didn't exist. They weren't true. But they, they did. They are true. Because it ruins their position. How can I hate Trump if they're not true? So it's sad that they don't just look at it and stick to their basic principles, because if you stick to the basic principle of nonviolence and you do it consistently, I think you're more likely to come down on the right side of things, the correct side and the moral side of things, if people can accept a basic principle like that, rather than accepting the principle of violence and authoritarianism, that we are responsible for taking care of the people. The people can't take care of themselves. We have to protect them. We have to feed them. We have to clothe them. We have to make sure they're safe and secure. And they accept that philosophy. So then anything goes. Once you accept this whole idea of authoritarianism, it opens a door to everything. If you're in the middle, you really open the door too, just even a little bit, because, I'll weigh it. Maybe I'll do it this way or this way. It's only the principle of protecting, individual liberty that makes it sound. If you reject the violence, believe me, we would have a much freer and a much happier world.
And the whole thing may come back to bite them, because, even after 3 years of saying that Trump was only in power because of Putin, that he's, beholden to Russia, even after that was proven to be untrue, as you point out, there are the dead enders who still want to believe it, and they're still going to want to believe what they've been told about this so-called insurrection. But, the funny thing about the impeachment, and our good friend Jonathan Turley has a good piece a couple of days ago, maybe it was yesterday, saying to the Democrats, be careful what you're doing, because what you're actually doing may backfire on you, and for political reasons. Trump beating the Russiagate thing because it wasn't true. I even saw on Zero Hedge, Dr. Paul, I don't know if you saw this the other day, that Pelosi's she's hesitating to send the papers over to the Senate because she's worried about lack of evidence. So sentence first, evidence later. So as Turley said, this could have a real backlash. If their goal, with their real goal with the impeachment, is to try to legally prevent Trump from ever running again, that might actually backfire, and it may actually make Trump even more popular. And even as he leaves office, strangely enough, he's leaving with a very high approval rating. Maybe that's because of why the reasons why the Democrats have attacked him, the people that hate him have attacked him. You're not going to convince people that are in favor of him with the kinds of attacks they've put out. So
you know, right. I want to move on. I want to touch on another issue as we finish up, because this is a positive issue, and it makes the point that the governments we have are basically always endorsed by the people. And you say that's crazy nonsense. The people didn't all of a sudden get up and say we all want to be vicious communists. But no, they endorsed it until a point when it didn't work anymore, and communism, Marxism, and the Soviet system just collapsed because it no longer had support from the people. It's not a neat little thing. They have support, they get rid of it, and it disappears. But basically, the bad governments have to get support from the people until they get sick and tired of it. And right now, and we report quite frequently on the areas where people are doing the right thing and resisting some of the authoritarianism of the dealing with the coronavirus. But this is showing that a number of people in Italy have responded by saying enough is enough, and this is encouraging, because it's over 50,000 restaurants in Italy declare, I am open. They put up signs. Wouldn't that be just neat that people all of a sudden across America, they read the reports and they know darn well the masks never helped and caused more harm than they helped, and all of a sudden, no need for a mask. Welcome. Is that going to happen? That's when the people decide that it. So they do it. 50,000 restaurants, I am open, defying lockdown measures. What are they going to do? Try to arrest those people? But the consensus is what I'm talking about. The consensus changed. They didn't start at the beginning and say, well, you shouldn't have done it because the principle of non-aggression says you shouldn't do that. You should deal with these problems some other way. But they got it, authoritarian approach they had for a long time. They undermine liberty. They ruin the economy. And finally, people get fed up. So I would say, Daniel, is there any way we can congratulate those 50,000 restaurants, say, go to it and declare, I am open. Okay, well, wait till it comes to America. We might see some really neat signs out there. I am open. Don't wear your mask.
What's been so depressing this past year, Dr. Paul, is to see how much sheep the Americans have become, because we've seen so many things like this in Europe of people standing up, and we Americans like to pride themselves on their rugged individualism, but it really hasn't shown. But these 50,000 Italian restaurants, I talked to our friend Phil Giraldi the other day, and he said, I lived in Italy and I know what these restaurants are like. They're small mom and pop restaurants. They're struggling, they're desperate to survive, and they just had it and they're fed up. And so what can the cops do with 50,000 restaurants? In fact, there are some videos shown where people went into these restaurants and said they're open. The police came in and the customers escorted the police out. No, please get out of here. We're trying to have a meal. So it's very encouraging. And it's actually not just encouraging because it's Italy. It's encouraging because it's becoming a movement. The I am open movement. It spread to Mexico. It spread to Switzerland. It spread to Poland. So this slogan, it's a great, simple slogan, I am open, we are open, and it's spreading everywhere, and we're seeing a lot more protests in Europe. In fact, in Amsterdam, thousands were out. In Austria over the weekend, thousands were out protesting the lockdowns, which now we know, Dr. Paul, we have an article that Adam Dick at RPI put up on our site. We know now there's a peer-reviewed study from Stanford saying that the lockdowns have not worked, they have not done what they purport to do. So yes, this is great because it is a movement. It would be wonderful to see that movement spread across the U.S. But I've been a little depressed, Dr. Paul, at what I've seen from my fellow Americans over the past year.
Right. You know, Americans have been taught, and they use this argument too, I don't really believe in this mask saving lives, but I do it because it's the law. It's the law, and I obey the law, and we're a law-abiding citizen. And a lot of people stick to that, even though they aren't enthusiastic about it. But the whole thing is they obey the law, and it's not necessary, because excuse me, because in truth, most of the time it's not a law. It's just an edict, you know, executive orders in the cities. They shouldn't feel any guilt about standing up for what they think is morally and scientifically correct to do it. So they shouldn't feel any guilt that they are disobeying the law, and therefore we should change the law and, you know, get more and more politicians in there. No, I think the restaurateurs are the way to go. Just say, you know, I'm open for business, and this will take care of it. Go ahead.
I'll finish with a thought on that, based on what you said, Dr. Paul, and I don't have it in front of me, but I did read over the weekend a resolution that was put together by the legislature in North Dakota, which has had some lockdowns and hasn't done any better than other states, certainly hasn't done any better than South Dakota, which was completely open. But the lawmakers there, the legislature, got together and drafted a bill restricting the governor's ability to rule by edict in times of emergency. And that really, I think, is where some reason is going to come back to the states. And I really wish it would happen in Texas, that the legislature would say, hang on a minute, you don't get to declare an indefinite emergency. At the very least, we need to review it periodically. So it's good to see this happening in North Dakota, Dr. Paul, and hopefully that will also spread elsewhere. The legislatures will wake up and actually start doing their jobs.
There you go. That's what we need. And South Dakota, you know, has set that good example. But I believe that things can be improved in spite of all the signs that we have and what's going on in Washington and in the economy and all things. Because if we got rid of just the lockdown, it doesn't solve the problem of spending and monetizing a debt, which is a rare, very serious problem. But if you just restore liberty, if we did only two little things, restore liberty to the people, let them take care of their health problems totally and completely, and also, get a sound monetary system. You know, and say, we're not going to permit excessive spending and deficit and have that. You did these two things and make sure that the tax system was, not outrageous, you know, very decent, like getting rid of the income tax or something. I'll tell you, this country, it wouldn't take, there'd have to be some bankruptcies and a few things like that, but give it 6 months or a year and everything would be back again. Even when conditions exist like this, and in many other countries, they go through this periodically, some of them never seem to suffer quite the way you'd think it should because of all the rules and regulations and price controls and everything else. That's because there's always a free market economy, which is called the underground economy, you know, the real economy, because it always exists. And I imagine there's still, a bit of that in this country, and that keeps things going. But why don't we legalize that? And there's no reason not to be optimistic that if we did the right thing, things would improve rather quickly. And that's what we certainly hope to look forward to about, the restaurants waking up. Everybody else might wake up and maybe it'll get contagious. Maybe it'll even come to this country and people will finally say, enough is enough. Let's try freedom for a change. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.